big day here at Ask an Atheist. Although we'll get to that in a minute. If you paid attention to our website in the last week, you may have noticed that we were actually down for a day.
Down for a day?
Yeah. And not just because, you know, once again, I accidentally spilled beer on the disk cluster or something like that. We actually intentionally took it down.
Yeah.
Something we don't normally do is it's not something that necessarily intersects with the atheism visibility movement, but we feel like it really should.
Yeah. Necessary to the atheist visibility movement. How many of us came to our atheism, or to at least admit publicly that we're atheists, through the internet? That's, I mean, the biggest venue for information, for podcasts, for blogs, for whatever. We all get a lot of our information, and we share a lot through the internet.
Yeah, so if you haven't figured it out yet, we're talking about the SOPA and PIPA bills, which were thankfully recently basically shot down in the legislature, which would have given wide berth to copyright owners to go after internet content internationally,
wrongly and rightly,
and it was of course the wrong end of it that we were mostly concerned with, especially for the atheism visibility movement. The vigilante protection clauses that basically gave copyright owners carte blanche to digitally attack people and to be constant or to be lawfully protected in their digital, they're basically their cybercrime.
Yeah, so much of what the atheist visibility movement does, and really any kind of activism, really, is that you can show the ridiculousness of the arguments of your opponents by using their footage in a legal, constitutional, fair use way for use of criticism. And a lot of these people, these are, again, the same sort of entertainment industry that tried to sue to prevent the sales of the VCR.
Right.
These people are not rational and will use, I guess you can say, just frivolous lawsuits, knowing that, yeah, they're not going to win in the courts, but they can bankrupt you in the meantime.
So to summarize, there was an internet protest. Wikipedia was involved, Reddit was involved, where everybody took their website down for at least 12 hours, but most people took them down for 24, and we participated. And the number of legislators against the bill, I think, tripled after that particular protest, and the hundreds and thousands and perhaps millions of signatures that they received.
And not just from the Ted Stevens speech that everyone knows from a couple of years ago, I really don't think that legislators get the internet.
Yeah.
I think they get it a little bit more now.
So I haven't said so yet, but go ahead.
The average age, I was reading, of Congress is 62.2 years old.
Yeah.
Now, for a lot of us, that means our grandparents, basically. Think about your grandparents, what they know about the internet, those people legislating it. Scary.
They're even in charge of committees that oversee it.
So this is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam, and with me today is Deanna.
Hello.
And as usual, Mike. How you doing?
Happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So, we got some email. We haven't really touched email in a few days, have we?
It's been a while.
Yeah. So our next email.
I like email. It justifies the name of our show.
So our first email comes from Nicole from the internet, and she writes to us, "Can you give me a couple of reasons why you don't think God exists and the Bible isn't true?"
Oh, so much to say. We've done entire shows about this, but I guess if you wanted to get the brief version, Nicole, it's because there's a lack of good, independently verifiable evidence supporting the existence of a God, and that even the best arguments that I've seen that people have given for God still avoid evidence altogether, or point to totally unrelated things like, ooh, look at the flowers, look at the trees, or even just fall back on threats of hell.
Yeah, and you know, a big part of, for me, was that things, when I was a kid and I was like in church or in Sunday school, and they would be talking about, for instance, the Noah's Ark story. That story just doesn't make a lot of sense, because there are certain elements to it that are just almost impossible. Like, if God drowned the entire world, the fish drowned too. According to the story, nothing was left alive, right? Except for what Noah had on his ship. So you go, well, where did that come from? And then just the whole idea that the entire world could be repopulated in 6,000 years since that story was told.
A population bottleneck without evolution is what it is.
Yeah. Boy, we would all be really inbred and probably pretty badly off if that were true.
Yeah, those are a lot of the same reasons. Those kind of scientific errors in the Bible go to your sort of second question, Nicole, why we believe the Bible isn't true.
Yeah.
The Bible's a book that has talking snakes and donkeys in it. It's a book that mentions unicorns and giants. Yeah. It says that bats are birds.
And we're talking about the Bible and not Shrek, correct?
Yeah, well, the Shrek has talking donkeys too, but yeah. I bet you it has about the same factual basis for believing that Shrek is true as the Bible.
One of the things that I tell religious people that tends to get their attention in a way that some of our usual arguments doesn't is that the farther away we get from biblical times, the less awesome the miracles seem to become. Where, you know, in BCE times, you know, God would follow people around as a flaming cloud or, you know, just randomly kill a bunch of people and stuff like that. Where now he shows up on toast or in a hot spring or something like that. And if it just so happens that the interestingness of the miracles seems to decrease as our understanding of the universe increases.
Yeah. I think that it kind of comes into play that, like I said, those arguments for God are really, really bad.
Yeah.
Like, the miracle is to look at that pretty flower.
Yeah.
In this case, I think that an argument only has to be as good as the person it's trying to convince, and if the person really, really, really wants to believe, then that toast is good enough.
Right.
a big thing, too, that that God has been based on as far as a belief system, and any God you can pretty much choose from history, is to explain things that we don't understand. You know, way, way back in ancient times, it used to be, which was the Greek myth where the chariot pulling the sun across the sky with
Apollo.
Apollo.
I was going to say Helios, but that's Latin, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, that was the explanation for why the sun rises and sets, and so it was a God that did it, and now, you know, we understand that we are in a place where we orbit around the sun. So that explanation no longer is needed. And you'll see that as our understanding of the world scientifically, naturally is expanded, there are less places for God to fit because we understand more.
And it also goes into a conversation we used to have quite frequently on Ask an Atheist, though it's trailed off in a bit, is the difference between belief and knowledge. I mean, from a knowledge perspective, from an epistemological standpoint, if I said that right, there is no evidence for God. I remain agnostic. I believe that question is still open. What do I believe? What do I think the likely outcomes in our multi-millennial search for God will be? Is I don't think we'll find evidence. I don't think there is evidence to be had.
And have been so many people who have tried really, really hard to try to find that evidence or to present that evidence.
Yeah.
And it's been so bad so far.
Yeah.
And I don't expect that they're going to find anything new because they just put new coat of paint on an old bad argument.
And another thing is that the universe is enormous. You look at, you know, the Hubble Deep Survey, you look at any particular, the dark spots of the sky, the parts of the sky where there are no stars, no nebula, no planets, no nothing. We look at those parts with a good telescope, with a Hubble telescope or one of the high altitude telescopes, and you see thousands and hundreds of thousands of galaxies that go 13 million light years away, right to the leftovers of the Big Bang. The universe is enormous, and I have never seen a religion, even the modern space religions, that really take that into the enormity of the universe and our insignificance in it into account.
And you'd think that sort of majesty would be mentioned in these books written by a being that is beyond everything.
Right.
If you want to use God for the explanation of the universe and how awesome your God is, you would say, my God created a universe that is so freaking infinitely huge that you can't even imagine how huge it is. You won't find out for another couple thousand years how awesome the universe is. But it doesn't say that.
And he used the word, majesty. And this is what comes to what I think some atheists feel about, is that this enormity of the universe and the complexity of the universe and just, I don't want to say magic, but there is sort of a, it's really amazing. And that it fills us with a certain type of joy that I think religious people don't feel, because they expect that, you know, they want to be significant and they want to be unique in the universe. And I just don't feel that way.
But I think there's a different response too, which is that, and this is something that Richard Dawkins has mentioned many times, which is that religion makes people satisfied with not knowing things, that you want to pretend that you already know all of these big answers to these sorts of questions, where when somebody who is more scientifically minded looks at that sort of immense just scale of the universe, all that comes into their mind are all these questions. Oh, I want to know this. I want to know that. And then when they get those answers, they don't go, that's fine, I know enough. You can never know enough.
Right.
That there's always things that you're not going to know, the things that we're going to learn in lifetimes that not even come close to coinciding with yours. And people are going to know amazing things that I will never get to see. And it's only because they don't stop asking questions when they get answers, because that answers prompt other questions. They don't make you go, I know enough. I don't need to see anything in science class. My pastor told me everything I need to know. Talking snake in a tree, done.
Yeah. The fact that there's mystery in the universe, love, there's stuff that we don't know, is awesome to me. And I'll tell you, there's a reason atheists set Carl Sagan to music. I mean, he was really good at sort of capturing the awesome mystery of the way things are and what we don't know yet.
And he debunks that whole idea of this sort of straw man Vulcan that I think a lot of religionists try to cast an atheist at, which is that you can't have this sense of awe or wonder or reverence or anything for science, for knowledge.
Yeah.
That you have to, oh, well, this is just a dry, cold collection of facts, and that there's no love or joy, or that you take out emotion and feeling. That is completely untrue. We feel things just as deeply as anything else, and we can even have these sorts of feelings of sort of transcendent joy or emotion for things that we know are fiction.
There was originally a Part of the Problem podcast back when I was, before Ask an Atheist, where I really wanted to talk about that particular thing. And I think we may do an episode about that in the future. I don't know about you, but I really like to.
I think it's important because it's one of these key arguments that religious people do, which is they think that simply having this emotional response to a stimulus in their church, whether it's music or a sunset or something, is somehow proof of a supernatural but totally unrelated thing.
Yeah, you know, Tim Minchin, I think, says it best at the end of Storm, the video, and I'm not going to say it right, so I won't even try, but I'll paraphrase, is that what really turns my crank is that the universe is so big and so awesome, and there's so much that we don't know, and there's beauty and wonder and just coolness everywhere, and that I'm a teeny tiny, itty bitty, little tiny, insignificant speck on an insignificant speck in an insignificant speck in the corner of the universe.
Nice.
I love that.
And another thing he said in that exact same thing goes to something that, why again, Nicole, why is it that I have a hard time believing this? So when a religious person comes, even with a new claim to me, that I immediately roll my eyes, it's because, like Tim Minchin says, every mystery that has ever been solved has always turned out to be not magic.
Yeah.
That every single time a religious person has claimed that they understand why people get sick, they understand why the sun comes up, they understand why this or that natural phenomenon happens, every single time they have been wrong. There's a big fat goose egg in their score for a number of claims about how the universe works that they've gotten right.
And this plays into something we'll be talking about today, and is that magic was a good stand, well, maybe not a good stand-in, but it was what we had, and it kind of worked as a replacement for knowledge back in the day when we didn't know, in prehistory, you know, where people had to make sense of things. But we got better stuff now.
So much better stuff. It was kind of like the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings movie, where for the longest time, if you were a fantasy fan, that's all you had.
Yeah.
And it was flawed and it was awful, but it was all you had. And things are so much better now.
I'm near calling a Ralph Bakshi moratorium.
I think that's just a good idea if you've seen some of Ralph Bakshi's movies.
Well, we've got one announcement for today, which is there's a conference. There's a free thought conference coming up here in Washington, and it's the Northwest Freethought Alliance 2012 conference. It'll be Friday through Sunday, March 30th through April 1st, and it's got some big names involved. Friend of the show, Sean Faircloth, Richard Dawkins, and some other. Let's see, Ask an Atheist. Have you heard of them?
I've never
heard of those guys.
Yeah,
sounds lame.
It will be at Renton Technical College. You can get more information on their website and at nwfreethoughtalliance.org. And, joking aside, we will be producing an episode of the show there. And it'll be the first time we're producing, actually producing a show in front of a live audience since the scan days. And I'm really kind of looking forward to it because I kind of liked it when people laughed.
I do like the possible potential for a giant train wreck.
Oh, always good. And you know that's what listeners like.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Come watch us fail.
It's like why you go to the circus, because you kind of hope somebody's going to fall off the trapeze or get their arm ripped off by a bear.
That's the same reason that you want to watch coverage of Charlie Sheen.
Oh, okay.
I just want to watch the human failure.
This is Ask an Atheist, and we're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to get into our topic and have a conversation with a very special guest.
The the Steampunk Exhibition Ball is almost here. Be a part of history on Saturday, January 28th at Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. Savor the sights and sounds of local music and sultry burlesque. Sip absinthe in the Green Fairy Parlor. Swirl in the Waltzing Ballroom and strut your stuff at the costume competition. General admission and VIP tickets now on sale through Stranger Tickets. For details, visit steampunkexhibitionball.com. That's steampunkexhibitionball.com. The ball is a benefit for the Center for Sex Positive Culture. Must be 18 or older with valid ID.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences, and more. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's number one source of atheist videos.
Did you know that not a single psychic or paranormal event has ever been reproduced?
Have you ever wondered about the effectiveness of faith healing, Reiki, or sports bracelets?
Was 9/11 an inside job, or is that all just another unproven conspiracy theory?
Come check out the Seattle Skeptics, a group focused on lively debates and a critical examination of pseudoscience, alternative medicine, and anything else that hasn't held up to the light of the scientific method.
Seattle Skeptics was created for those who require a higher bar of evidence than gut feelings or blind belief.
We're not contrarians or cynics, we just want to see the evidence.
And so should you.
Check us out at seattleskeptics.org.
That's seattleskeptics.org.
Are your bowling skills sufficiently magical for the $1 million JREF challenge? After the show, come to Tower Lane, 6323 6th Avenue in Tacoma. Join the Ask an Atheist gang, as well as Humanists of Washington and the Auburn Freethought Society, as we bowl in celebration of another year of Ask an Atheist and a show well done. Again, that's 5 p.m. at Tower Lanes, 6323 6th Avenue in Tacoma.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist. And we don't really trust ourselves to define homeopathy, really.
No, homeopathy is one of those things that you see at probably Rite Aid or Walgreens. You go in there. You really can't throw a rock in any direction in a pharmacy without hitting some kind of bogus pills or fake medicine these days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, these are guys, the remedies that empty your wallet or make some unethical quack with a misleading title of doctor, but they don't actually treat your ailments. I mean, there's these guys who get really, really rich by selling you fake stuff. I mean, it's kind of the equivalent of those guys who used to sell you snake oil back in the 19th century.
Yeah, and so in order to talk about that, we're going to have a conversation with a man who spent a lot of time lecturing about its ineffectiveness. And first of all, the show you're listening to right now would not exist without James Randi, because before I was an atheist activist or I did the radio show or anything like that, I was a skeptic, and I got a lot of the idea of skepticism and what it looked like from James Randi, and he began his career as a stage magician, as the Amazing Randi, or as he would prefer it, a conjurer. He then became a relentless investigator and debunker of pseudoscientific claims. He's been on Johnny Carson a bunch of times, one of my favorite shows as a kid. Famously, one time with a psychic surgery segment where he actually performed psychic surgery on stage, but not really, you know how that is.
I love that. That was one of the first things I ever saw Randi do, was the psychic surgery debunking.
Yeah. He's the author of numerous books, including The Faith Healers, Flim Flam, and an Encyclopedia of Claims, Frauds, and Hoaxes of the Occult and Supernatural. He lectures and he's on television and appearances, and he's delighted and vexed audiences around the world, and he's at the front of the James Randi Educational Foundation. James Randi, how are you today?
Very good to be here.
So, Mr. Randi, we don't really trust ourselves to define homeopathy with a straight face. It's one of these pseudosciences that when you explain it to someone, it sounds like you're just making stuff up to make fun of it. Could you tell us what homeopathy is?
It's mainly delusion, and when I say delusion, I say it very, very firmly and very loudly, because you have never heard of the delusions that these people will use. They use delusions of the original medicine to one part in billions of parts of a solute or the thing that is diluted with. Martin Gardner did a bit of a problem for me some time ago. I called him on the phone, as I did so often, and I simply gave him a problem. I said, I have these Calms Forte sleeping pills here. Now, the active ingredient, this sounds crazy, and I am not that crazy, nor are you, I'm sure. I certainly hope so. hope not, that is.
I'm trying not to be.
The sleeping pills that Calms Forte turned out, they've changed the formula now for some strange esoteric reason. But back then, it was actually diluted copia cruda. In Latin, that means crude coffee beans. Now, not caffeine, not instant coffee, not coffee itself, but just the beans. They would grind the beans up to a powder, and they would dilute them to billions of parts of dilutant, whatever the dilutant was, water or flour or whatever they used. It doesn't make much difference because it's not there anyway.
Yeah.
This caffeine stuff, caffea cruda, I mean, that is such a ridiculous thing. I asked Martin, how many of these pills would I have to take to make sure that I got at least one molecule of caffeine? Now, I don't know the formula offhand for caffeine, but it's an organic compound, and it's rather small, to say the least, okay? I just wanted one molecule of it to make sure I got one molecule. Well, he hung up on me and called me back later on, and he said, I hope you're seated. And I said, yes, quite safely, no fear of falling down. But I almost did, because he told me that it would take 16 average swimming pools full of pills that I would have to swallow in order to make sure that I got at least one molecule of caffeine.
Wow.
Now, yeah, sure, it's funny, but it's serious when you come right down to it.
Yeah.
Because that's what people are buying. They're
right.
Not getting any caffeine. They're not getting any coffee bean. All they're getting is the milk sugar or whatever, and lactose, whatever is used to dilute this substance down. And that's billions of parts to one. And it's so incredible that you would have to get one molecule of caffeine, eat 16 swimming pools. Now, I don't look as good in a bathing suit as I once did, I must say. But it's not a pretty sight in any case. I don't think it ever was, come to think of it. But can you imagine me at the side of the first of 16 swimming pools with video cameras rolling, saying, okay, here I go. And then I go and gobble, 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 gobble. Now, how they get me out of the swimming pool, I have no idea.
Right.
With a derrick or something like that. And then I hope they would ask me at that point, do you feel sleepy?
Well, yeah, you know, eating too much can make you sleepy, right?
That's true.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that might be one effect.
Well, it's interesting because you've actually, you know, with your TED Talk and on YouTube and a bunch of other places, it's something you've done is the whole bottle of the Calms Forte, and it's unlikely that you've even had a single molecule of caffeine yet then.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Now, the interesting thing about that particular TED Talk that you mentioned is that I did swallow a whole 32 tablets, I believe it was, of Calms Forte sleeping pills, and I use those words in quotes, as you probably know in my voice, and I went right on with the show, and I didn't feel sleepy afterwards. I had a hard time getting to sleep that very same night, as a matter of fact. But nonetheless, I swallowed the whole thing. It had no side effects, and there was a chap whose name, Mike Myers, I think that was his name. He's a financial advisor on the Internet. Maybe you want to look him up and tell him what you think of him. He actually accused me in his column of having done some sleight of hand because he knows that homeopathy works, you see. And so I said, well, I'm prepared to repeat this anytime you want. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $1,000 if you repeat the experiment and I witness it. I said, you're wrong. Because I'm a sport, you know that. I'm such a daring person. And so I gave him a call. Pardon me, I sent him a letter, actually, a registered letter.
Right.
And said 2 weeks before I would be in New York, I said, I'll be in New York on such and such a date. I would be lecturing at the New York Skeptics in New York City. And I said, I'll be available, and you have to Have me under surveillance for 24 hours, and I will be ready. I insisted that he stay with me for a good 24 hours, and I would guarantee that I wouldn't fall asleep.
Right.
Okay, he wrote me back, and he said, no, I can't make that. And I said, okay, we'll do it another time, and I gave him another date. And he wrote me back, and he said, I not only can't make that, but I'm not going to do it, because it would just satisfy you, and it would give you some headlines and all that sort of thing, and you'd probably kill yourself, and you'd be in danger of dying, you see. So he was off the thing. He canceled it, but we never got the $1,000.
That's a recurring theme, I think.
Yes, you've heard this sort of thing before. This is not news to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that this is a pretty common thing when you do these sorts of tests, or you propose these sorts of tests with people who are either making a pseudoscientific or paranormal claim, is that suddenly when the test is actually there, it's amazing the number of excuses they have, or, you know, escape clauses they have for how their powers or whatever works.
Yeah, well, hey, I made an offer in good faith, and he agreed to pay $1,000. I didn't ask him for the $1,000. He volunteered it. And he didn't even give me a nickel. So I got to get at least a nickel from him next time I see him.
So there's this thing that I'm seeing a lot is these proponents of homeopathy are actually pointing to the onstage overdoses that you do and say, isn't this just proof that homeopathy is safe?
Oh, it's perfectly safe, all right, except that you may overdose on lactose. I'm not too sure.
No,
if you're lactose intolerant, that may do you in. I'm not sure, but it certainly might even make you sleep permanently.
It causes gas really bad, actually.
Yeah. Oh, does it?
Which can be deadly to your audience.
I see you've taken lots of these pills, have you?
My husband is lactose intolerant.
I see.
So, Mr. Randy, what is the James Randi Educational Foundation doing to bring attention and shine a light on homeopathy and its claims?
Well, I can tell you, we're very active in this field, as I'm sure you know. I'm so active in this field with the foundation. Now, the foundation is the dearest thing in the world to me, as you may have imagined. And when we talk about homeopathy and what we're going to do, we're certainly going to get in on the 1023 campaign. You know about the 1023 campaign, do you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's where a bunch of people around the world demonstrate in front of drug stores, and they all take things like the Calms Forte in large overdoses in order to highlight to the world what homeopathy is, how ridiculous it is, and how it doesn't work, inspired, I'm sure, by you.
Well, now, we've got to explain what 1023 means. That doesn't mean 10:23. It means 10 to the 23rd power, because that's the dilution that they put this substance to. And for Calms Forte and for most of the other sleeping pills that I've encountered all through Scandinavia and all over Europe and in Australia, they usually use the 10 to the 23rd power. People realize this is 10 with 23 zeros after it. It's an incredible figure. One part in 10, comma, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, going on and on, all the way to 23 zeros, parts of dilutant. This is incredible. Now, we're planning our homeopathy campaign this year for the month of October, because October has Halloween and good stuff like that, you know. And actually, it's October 23rd, or 10 to the 23rd. Get it?
Yeah.
Perfect.
23, there you go. And that's well past Avogadro's limit. I never liked Avogadro anyway. he was a very argumentative guy. You know, he made rules and delusions and all kinds of limits and such. But in any case, we are going to celebrate that fact. And last year, as you know, we challenged the manufacturers of homeopathic remedies to the tune of $1 million, the $1 million that we don't carry around with us exactly,
right,
but we have invested with an investment house in New York City, and it's now $1.2 million, though we'll only pay out $1 million of it. I want some change left over at the end of the thing. And we actually offered them this $1 million to step up, and we'll probably go ahead with the test, whether or not the manufacturers want to participate. They don't want this kind of thing. Boiron, B-O-I-R-O-N, is the big manufacturer of homeopathic so-called remedies. And they are very loath to have anything to do with this. They don't even want to talk to me or write to me or acknowledge that I exist at all. Maybe I should show up on their doorstep and take a fatal dose of sleeping pills right in front of them.
Well, that's the thing is, we talk about, with the 10 to the 23rd power and Adrogavo's number and stuff like that, and how these medications aren't harmless. However, there's sort of a secondary harm in that people believe that these homeopathic remedies work to the detriment of actual medicine, of real medicine.
That's true. It takes them away from genuine medication. Now, we're not talking about sleeping pills in this case. We're talking about acetylcholine, for example. This is absolutely ridiculous. That's duck liver.
Wow.
They have a homeopathic medicine that's supposed to relieve the symptoms of flu. Not the flu, but the symptoms of flu. And there would be some value in that if it worked. But we found out, and I did some calculation, Martin Gardner helped me on this some years ago as well, and we found out that you could make enough silicochium pills to fill the solar system with the sun at the center and the orbit of Pluto at the outside. I still favor keeping Pluto, you see, because
yeah.
I'm an old-fashioned guy. That's a huge sphere. You would need one duck liver, and you can wait until the duck dies of old age, or you can kill it with kindness or whatever, sneak up on it. I don't care how you do it. Take the liver out, because the duck's finished with it by then, and make the pills, and you can fill the solar system. Now, this is so ridiculous. People say, oh, you're acting like a clown when you talk about this. No, no, the clowns are the homeopaths themselves. It's not us.
So what kind of claims do they make when they say that these dilutions work in the first place? It seems like admitting that it's diluted is essentially admitting that it's nothing. I mean, what do these people say to defend their, I guess you could say, craft?
Did you say diluted or diluted? I didn't hear.
Same way, either way.
Oh, okay, it doesn't make much difference at this point, does it?
Not at all.
They say that the vibrations are still there, you see. Now, they don't know vibrations. You give them a bushel basket full of vibrations, they wouldn't know where to put them or what to do with them or what they look like or what they consist of. They know nothing about it at all. They just use the word because it's sort of nice. Vibrations. It sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds like a very small massage by a butterfly.
That's absolutely... So I have to ask, have you heard any response? Have you been throwing out the challenge and you've gotten silence from the homeopaths? Has anyone said anything?
No. They don't respond at all. They simply block it off. They don't... Because what can they say? They can't say anything. All they can say is, yes, I will, or yes, I won't, or no, I won't, pardon me. But if they say they won't, they're giving up. If they say they will, they know they'll lose. They know perfectly well there's nothing in their medicine.
Yeah. And here's an opportunity. I mean, you literally put your money where your mouth is in this case. And this was a question I wanted to have, that you've answered already, which was, would homeopathy work for the $1 million challenge? And you've just said that you're willing to do the test there.
Yes. Now, the reason for that is, I must explain, we deal with paranormal and occult and supernatural claims, of course.
Right.
But if homeopathy actually worked as Hahnemann designed it originally and as it's used today, if it actually did work, that in itself would be a supernatural event because there's none of the original substance left.
Right.
And we don't know of anything but supernatural powers that could give the vibrations the power that they say they have. So that's why we will award the $1 million prize for any demonstration of homeopathy.
It sounds like it's by its very definition that homeopathy would completely overturn everything we knew about chemistry.
Well, of course, and physics.
Yeah, and the vibrations things. I mean, one of my hobbies is radio, and people love to talk about crystals and vibrations and stuff like that. And when they talk about specifically about crystal vibrations, I mean, I think of oscillators and radios and crystal radios and stuff like that. And it doesn't do very much, but then they try to apply it to medicine and everything else. It just seems like people will grab on to nomenclature from science and physics and medicine and just try to apply it to the same supernatural nonsense that they've always believed.
That's right. That's exactly what they do. And they use terminology. It's not only vibrations. It's all kinds of other terms. Quantum. This is the latest, by the way. I want you to be ready for this.
Okay.
Vibrations were around for 30 years or so as a quack term here. But now it's quantum vibrations, which are obviously much worse and much more powerful.
Right.
Absolutely. And it sounds so scientific.
It sounds scientific as can be. But they don't know what these things mean at all, nor does anyone else.
Yeah, I remember seeing a debate once that Deepak Chopra took part in, where a physicist actually got up to the queue to ask him a question in the microphone, and Chopra just started spitting a bunch of stuff out about quantum physics and stuff, and they asked the physicist what he thought, and he says, well, I understood all of the individual words in that sentence.
Yeah. Yes, because like he speaks very well, he does.
So basically, homeopathy is like a form of energy medicine, like, you know, Reiki or acupuncture or those kind of things. So it's not actually a medicine in the way that we would understand it, right?
No, of course not. No, it has no ingredients. I mean, the first thing about a medicine, it's got to have ingredients. I mean, let's get real here, folks. Medicine that has no ingredients, that's like, say, a bank account with no money in it.
Useless.
So I know that JREF has been kind of hitting hard, and one of the big, I guess you could say, successes in the recent years against homeopathy was that the British National Health Service stopped paying out for homeopathic treatments, and that you guys have been working really hard to get this sort of success here in the United States. And I have to ask, what sort of regulation or labeling would you hope to see on homeopathic products in pharmacies?
Well, you've got to understand that homeopathy is grandfathered in. That means that homeopathy existed and was functioning in the United States of America, if you can call that functioning, functioning so many years ago that was before the FTC arrived. So all regulation is off. It's grandfathered, and you cannot impose any regulations on it. You can't test it officially. The government can't pay for any tests of it. And not only that, nothing can be insisted on. They don't have to obey the law. They don't have to fall in with anything because there are no rules for what homeopathy should be or should not be. So they're free to say anything they want about it. It doesn't make any difference what they say. They can say anything.
The ramifications of that are pretty startling. I mean, if anything has even a remote connection to homeopathy, then the FTC and the government and regulatory commissions basically can't touch it.
And that's absolutely right. Yes, they're crippled. They have no means of getting anything done, and no legislation can be passed. And you see, that's one thing that I'm suggesting that the JREF and all the rationalist organizations and such should go after, is to try to get somebody in the Congress to bring up questions about this and see whether we can get this grandfathering thing for homeopathy, which is pure quackery and can be very, very damaging, not only financially but physically to people who depend on it, that they can do something about getting this grandfather clause taken out. And that can be done. It's been done before, and it can be done again.
I remember, actually, a short while ago, my sister told me a story where she had gone to a pharmacy to get medicine. I think it was for a flu. And it was actually kind of nice because the pharmacist actually told her not to buy certain homeopathic medicine because they were fake. Have we seen a lot of that in pharmacies? Or because they sell this stuff in the same aisles. I mean,
No, they're in the same in Walgreens here in Florida, certainly. Everyone I've seen, they have those medicines right beside the stuff that actually does work. And yet, on the other hand, there's another scam going on here. We've heard of Zicam, right? You see ads for Zicam all the time, Z-I-C-A-M. Now, they advertise it on the box, and on the back of the box, the front of the box, and in the leaflets inside as homeopathic. Mm-hmm. That enables them to charge up to 70% more than medicines that actually work. But Zicam does work, because it has a 2% solution of zinc gluconate in it. Now, that's a soluble form of a zinc compound, and it does work to relieve the symptoms of flu. It has other unfortunate side effects to some people, very unfortunate ones, so you have to be careful whether you'll take it or not. But it actually is a medication. A 2% concentration is so far over the limits that homeopathy has set for a concentration that it has no right to claim that it's homeopathic, but it says that it is on the box.
And that's incredibly dangerous because it blurs the lines between this pseudoscience, this quackery, and real medicine.
That's right.
Right. Couldn't you just simply put homeopathic on any dangerous medicine to avoid regulation?
Sure you can, of course, and that's exactly what Zicam has done. Because, A, it certainly is not, by definition, in any way homeopathic, and they know that they can get up to 70% more for an equivalent medicine that actually does work. And that's obviously the reason that they called it homeopathic, because they have to know that it's not homeopathic. They list right on the label that it's a 2% solution. And that, zinc gluconate is very powerful, and it does work.
That's just crazy, because it seems like one of the arguments I hear all the time from people who support homeopathy is that these evil pharmaceutical companies are trying to shut them down because they know their stuff, and they're just trying to grab up money. But the stuff that the homeopaths make is more expensive. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
Without any real track record. I mean, who's the money grubber there?
Well, it's certainly not expensive to make. You don't have to do anything. You just send them milk sugar. Now, the way they make the pills, by the way, is very interesting, too. On an assembly line, they'll have these homeopathic pills that they're going to put into blister packages. And what they do is they take a solution, dilute it down so there are no molecules of the original substance in it, and they just put a drop of water on each one of the pills as they go by on the assembly line. That's the way they dose the pills. And the pills are just lactic acid.
Jeez. And you know, the other side of this is that sometimes they don't even, some medications are calling that actually work and have research behind them are being called homeopathic. And then because there's no regulation, like for a long time there was those head-on commercials, which I just assumed it was roll-on aspirin or something like that. I never bought any. I never really looked into it. But then I find out when we start doing research on this homeopathy stuff that it was basically head chapstick.
That's right.
Absolutely. It's amazing stuff.
And it amazes me. And one of the things I've found is that when you explain homeopathy to people, they react as if you're making stuff up.
Yeah.
That it's
they
so
can't
ridiculous.
Believe it.
So, I mean, have you gotten a lot of pushback from people who think you're just talking about, you know, like herbal medicine?
Yes. After the TED Talk, I had all kinds of, many people after the TED Talk came to me and congratulated me for having gotten up there and said what I did say. And I was recovering from a double heart bypass and some chemotherapy for a colon cancer when I went up there to do the thing. So I was a little unsteady on my feet, but the reception I got was very, very encouraging, I must say. And there were some people who came around to me with their eyes bugging out and said, "You got to be kidding about the homeopathy. How do you feel?" You know, and I'm looking at them, and I'm guzzling away from the free beer that they always serve up there,
yeah,
and having a fine time. I'm not feeling any pain at all. And I told them that, and they said, "I don't understand it," because they warn you right on the label: in case of an overdose, call your poison control center.
Have you considered making that phone call? Because I really wonder how that conversation would go. I mean, is it really a poison control center? Is it a front organization set up?
Oh, no, I did. I called the poison... this is some years ago now. I just, for the heck of it, right from my office here, I called poison control center, and I said, "I think I've overdosed on sleeping pills." And they were very alarmed, and I heard that they got the ambulance fired up outside in the driveway, and they wanted to know my address, and I said, "I should tell you that it's a homeopathic sleeping pill that I took." And there was dead silence on the other end. And then I heard something that sounded like... They were laughing on the other end of the line and holding their hands over their mouths. And I heard the guy, he put his hand over the transmitter on the telephone, and he said, "The guy says it's homeopathic." And they were all laughing. And the fellow came back on again. He said, "Sir, I don't... you really need to have this. I don't think you really have to worry." And he was laughing while he was talking. And
wow.
I said, "You're making a joke about this overdose?" And he said, no, but I think with homeopathic medicine, you don't really have to worry very much." And he hung up on me, rightly, because he was probably going to roar for the next 2 days.
Right. That was the thing. Is in your talks, you've said that there's poison control information on the back, and those those people take it pretty seriously. And I can't imagine what that phone call would sound like. And it sounds like it actually sounds like exactly how I imagined it in my head. Is it just people on the phone in their phone queues just laughing, trying to be professional and failing? Is basically.
Yeah, can you imagine? I'm glad I wasn't at the other end of the thing, or they would have mobbed me.
So, on another subject, I know that we recently passed the 10-year, or actually close to 11-year anniversary of the so-called psychic Sylvia Brown accepting the $1 million challenge.
Yeah, so Sylvia, I still, wait, hold on. Oh, I thought I heard something at the door. That might have been her. No, no, it's not her. No, I guess not. It's just some other rodent out there.
So, no chance that's ever going to change, you think?
Oh, no, she's not. She doesn't need me.
Yeah.
She doesn't need us at all. She's got a thriving business going. She's laughing up her sleeve all the way to the bank. She is booked up for the next 2 years at $850 for a phone call that she'll make to you. She pays for that, by the way.
Right.
So generous. And she pays that kind of money, and you have to wait for up to 2 years because of her waiting list. Now, I don't think there's anybody listening to me here and on radio or any place that makes the kind of money that you can have $850 of pure profit, no costs except for the phone call, and you just hope that it isn't in Granada or someplace like that.
Yikes.
So that you cut your cost, your overhead, you see, for Sylvia. And for 20 minutes, she talks to you, and what she tells you, now I've got a whole raft of, just around the corner in my office here, of audio tapes, because she sends each one of her victims, clients, pardon me, and she sends them an audio tape of the conversation they had. Now, I think this is the biggest mistake that Sylvia makes, because people can then listen to it carefully and realize, as they all do, she told me nothing.
Wow.
And what she does is she gives them the names of your guardian angels, and she'll tell them the names that they were once known as in former lives. This is all very useful stuff, as you can see.
Right.
And, yeah, you need to know those things. How would you survive if you didn't know these things? But that's what she gives them. She gives them this nonsense, and then when they finally ask a question, like, my grandmother died, and she had the will, and we don't know where she put it, and she's only been dead for 6 weeks now. We're trying to contact her. And you'd expect that maybe grandmother would come in and say, it's in the book of the encyclopedia at the library, volume 2, or something like that. No, she doesn't. She just says, oh, dear, I have to go away. I love you all. Bye-bye. And grandma's gone, and so is Sylvia.
Oh, so it's pretty clear that Sylvia Brown is a giant fraud.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and a conscious fraud, don't you? She didn't do this by mistake.
And she does the past life thing, where, and they're always important people, right? It's never...
You're never somebody who shovels dung.
You're never a scrub maid or a barber or anything like that. No, no. You're always a either royalty or a nobility of some kind. You never come from a life of a scrub maid.
I'll be honest with you. Once on a lark, I went and actually talked to somebody who did that whole past life thing, and they said that, oh no, you were just farmers your whole track or whatever it was. And then I found out later that they had ahead of time found out that I was a skeptic and figured they'd just throw me a curveball.
Oh, yes.
I guess not everyone can be Alexander the Great.
True. Awesome. Very true.
So, Mr. Randy, of all the people that you and your foundation have tested over the years, how many of them do you think are actual frauds like Sylvia Brown, rather than sincere people who really think they have supernatural powers?
Oh, people like Sylvia Brown and Uri Geller and such and John Edward don't come anywhere near me.
Right.
Of course they can't. They know they're going to lose, so they don't need us, not at all, and they don't want to come anywhere near us. We would like them to come near us all the way, nose to nose, but they won't do it because they know what the dangers are, and they fear us, and they stay away from us. So we don't have any fear of a psyche suddenly showing up at the door. I must admit that when I go downstairs in the morning, I'm usually up just before 7. I go downstairs, I put the coffee on, I glance out the door just in case there's a line up there, but I'm always disappointed there's no line up.
So I've actually seen there's a small handful of your critics who actually claim that you have paranormal abilities yourself and that you use those powers to make them fail.
Right.
Are you a wizard, Mr. Randy? And what would would you say to people who think that you are?
They're not very smart.
So
they have to come up with some sort of excuse. They can't figure out how could he possibly do. I do this stuff on stage, and that's the mentalism that I do on stage, and some of it's pretty definitive stuff. Or it appears to be, and they look at it and they say, well, that's real. Obviously, I know that's real. You can't fool me. I'm a growing adult. Oh, yes, I can. I just did.
So if people want to learn more about homeopathy or the James Randi Educational Foundation, where should they go?
Isn't that strange, you should ask? Well, www.randy.org. You can write to us. You can go on our webpage, of course, and take a look. It's called Swift. We named it after Jonathan Swift, the famous, I would almost have to say cynic, rather than just a skeptic. But he was pretty fierce about it. Anyone who could invent Lilliput and Laputa and various islands like this, I mean, or various places like this, has got to be some sort of a genius in my mind. And I think that he would be laughing, just fit to kill, if he knew that we existed.
Well, James Randi is the founder of the James Randi Educational Foundation and investigator of supernatural and pseudoscientific claims. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a great pleasure, and remember, 10 to the 23rd power.
10 to the
Nothing stronger than that, or you could die. Okay?
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
All right. This is Ask an Atheist. We're going to go into a break and then do a very quick wrap-up. We'll see you in a moment.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Are your bowling skills sufficiently magical for the $1 million JREF challenge? After the show, come to Tower Lane, 6323 6th Avenue in Tacoma. Join the Ask an Atheist gang, as well as Humanists of Washington and the Auburn Freethought Society, as we bowl in celebration of another year of Ask an Atheist and a show well done. Again, that's 5 p.m. at Tower Lane's, 6323 6th Avenue in Tacoma.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We've got a call, but we got to go real quick. This is Jim, and he's local. He's a friend of ours. You got 30 seconds. How you doing? Hello, Jim.
Oh, me?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, well, since you'd rather have talked to James Randi than me, but that aside, I just want to say that I go to the fairs and confront these people that sell the power bands and the foot baths and all this other crazy stuff, and typically I wear my atheist shirts, my T-shirts. And when they see that I'm an atheist, they know they're not going to get anywhere with me.
Right.
And that's because once they see you're a skeptic and you want evidence, they know they don't have it.
Yeah.
And so it all connects. All the pseudoscience, religion, the arguments are exactly the same for all of them. They're all basically try it, you'll like it.
Yeah, they're all very similar, and like we're running up to the end of the hour, so we're going to have to move on.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk to you
later.
Thanks
a lot, man. Bye.
Bye.
That really is kind of the summation of it, that the once they know that you want real evidence and that you're not just looking for a feel-good thing, those people go running. They are terrified of people like James Randi.
They are. And of people who, anybody who's willing to expose them, like our friend Jim here, I believe, has a YouTube channel, at least Samwise Ganges, or something, I believe is his name.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yep. So you had something that we should cover. And like, there's two things about homeopathy that really don't make it work.
Yeah, if you're going to carry anything away from this episode, it's that homeopathy is based on two flawed principles, not just the delusion. The one is that like cures like, which is why that sleeping remedy used to be made with caffeine, is because they thought if they gave you caffeine, which keeps you awake, that homeopathically it would put you to sleep. And then the other half of that is that if they dilute it infinitely, that somehow that magically changes the effect, makes it stronger somehow, and then turns it into a sleeping remedy. So if you only take two things away, that's what you tell people when they ask you what homeopathy is, and they go, oh, wow, that is BS. You're right.
Yeah, and I mean, even I can be taken by it. Like I said, with the head-on thing, it was years before I realized it was homeopathic. It was just head chapstick.
Yeah, same with some of those hangover remedies that you're supposed to take and drink one every couple of hours and take a pill and drink a glass of water. Because what they're really doing is they're slowing you down on the drinking of alcohol and making you drink water to stay hydrated. But there's no effect hangover-wise.
So this is a big week for Ask an Atheist. I want to thank you guys for having me have a conversation with James Randi. I'm so into it. I'm having trouble talking for the protest we did earlier this week. This has been very good. Thank you both. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. I'm gonna go have a homeopathic beer. Just one drop.
All right. This was Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me was Mike Gillis and Deanna Joy Lyons. Our special guest was James Randi. If you can believe that. As usual, our music is Chris Coleman. Our production assistants were Darren Garvin, Jeremy Whitman, John Spinoza, and Rebecca Friedman. Our post show is at Tower Lanes, as you may have heard. Ask an Atheist is an EDM Media production. You can leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. I promise you we'll get to calls and more emails next week.
Clay Radio.